Hi dear movie breakers, here I am with the next interview for Movie Break at Berlinale. I'm still Lida Bach and I'm here with Amelia Blichfeld. Hi.
Hi.
She just signed the poster for her new movie, The Ugly Stepsister. And it's one of maybe five horror films at Berlinale, which is still pretty new to have horror films at A-list festivals. I love it. But were you conscious about that idea that it's a genre movie?
I've never been to Berlinale before. It's my first feature. So I didn't know much about Berlinale. And it's all gone so fast. The movie finished 10 days before Sundance. So it was finished 10 days before. So I haven't really had time to think. It was actually post the premiere in Berlinale yesterday that people said, this is not a typical Berlinale movie. And there were no walkouts. Usually people walk out if they don't find it interesting, and people stayed for the Q&A even after like midnight, and they said that this is not a thing for Berlinale. So yeah, great to hear.
There's usually this bias against genre movies, so it means that a genre film has to be about twice or three times as good as a drama or a comedy too. That's really true.
Oh, really?
If you look at that, not only Berlinale, if you look at A-list festivals, how few genre films really made it.
Yeah, that's true.
It really
means
that they have to be several times as good as a drama, comedy. And how did you find the story? We know it's Cinderella. So it is Grimm's Brothers fairy tale. So of course it's from Germany. So we are very, very familiar with it.
Yes.
But you keep, for one thing, very, very close to the original Grimm's Brothers stories, which is very bloody and very cruel. And also you make like a parody of the Disney movie. And then I think there are also influences from a certain old movie, which is called Three Hazelnuts for Cinderella.
Yes. That's true. We also see three hazelnuts for Cinderella in Norway. It's a Christmas tradition also in Norway. It's like Germany and Norway. We're obsessed with the movie. And the rest of the world needs to discover this movie because it's pure movie, magic. I read the Brothers Grimm's version of Cinderella when I was a little girl. I had this little book, even drawings, and this image of the stepsister on the horse of the prince, with three big blood drops coming out of the shoe, and her shocked face will never leave. And then I had a creative nap when I was working on one of my short films about a woman who is almost 2 meters tall, and she dreamt that she, or I got this image in my head that she thought she was Cinderella, and then it was put in winter landscape, just like in Three Hazelnuts for Cinderella. And she runs down the stairs. The prince is there, and it's this guy she's in love with, and she fits the shoe perfectly. He lifts her up on the horse like she weighs nothing, and they ride off. But then she, to her horror, realizes that her shoe is full of blood and that she is not Cinderella. She's actually the stepsister. And I immediately woke from my creative nap, and I was totally shocked because I had discovered a human being in a character and that I'd never sympathized with before. I could feel her shame and her distress and her agony, and I could totally sympathize with it because I had felt the same when I've tried and failed to fit within the beauty ideals and thought that that made me unlovable.
I think this is, for me personally at least, the most exciting and interesting aspect of this movie, that most films are made for beautiful people. So they sympathize with a beautiful person and assume that beauty equals goodness.
Exactly.
And then there are the people who were never told they're beautiful, who were even told like constantly, you're unattractive. We sympathize with the underdogs from the stories, like with the ugly stepsisters, with the monsters, with the witches and the outcasts.
Exactly.
There's also like this poignant link in the movie between the witch character and the ugly stepsister, because in the end, she comes almost to look like a witch.
I think that's a great thing. You say that she looks almost like a witch, because I think it's interesting. Witches, you know, have been used to scare. And personally, a classical witch nose is one of the most beautiful noses for me. And I think it's something that we have to start realizing and criticizing and analyzing and, you know, and speak up against.
So your film has a lot of body horror, as we always call it. Another interesting thing that struck me, and I think many people that maybe watch the movie are not aware of it, Many of those beauty procedures are actually based on real beauty treatments. Like, we can still find old advertisings. Get your tapeworm now. Order exactly. it per mail.
Yes,
and
yes,
you will
yes,
lose
yes.
10 pounds quickly.
Exactly.
And also nose correction that was there before we had anesthesia. So we know
yes.
that people did nose operations for beauty standards, not before they even had anesthesia. So how did you research into that? And were there more beauty treatments you didn't put in the movie that you
found? Yes, yes, yes. You know, I used the internet like most of us. It's a theme that I've been working on for a long time. So I was also thinking about how women in the 1600s used to leeches on their skin for them to suck blood.
Be pale.
To be pale.
Beauty
or
standard.
Even to drain blood to look pale. You know, I think that's very, very, very dangerous.
And a lot of lead, like right in your face.
Yes, 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 exactly, exactly. But I decided early on that I would not put anything in just to put it in. Every body horror scene would have to carry the story and the character and be linked to the character's feelings or carry metaphors also.
Recently, there was this movie, The Substance, and your film has been compared to it a lot. One issue I have with The Substance is that The Substance makes fun of its main character to a certain degree, and it also, in a certain degree, condemns beauty treatments. But you're more like neutral, but you admit the truth, which is true, that they are often painful.
Yes.
Would you like to elaborate on that? Because I always see this, that many people have those double standards about beauty treatments. Like, on one side is the society that tells you have to be perfect, but
exactly.
on the other hand, if you do something to be perfect, you're vain, you're
exactly.
arrogant.
I think that's why the Ugly Stepsister is so interesting as a character, because these are the things that we've thought of her when she cuts off her toes to fit the shoe, or and everything she does to try to be beautiful for the ball. Also in the fairy tales, we think that, oh my God, she's so ugly. Get over her yourself. You know, don't even try. You're just ridiculing yourself, and you're horrible and greedy and all of these things. I think just like you, it's the double standard and a double kind of punishment. And this is why I wanted to treat it as been in the public debate a little bit in Norway, or tried to write about these things. But I found it too hard to not be black and white, to not be more, come out moralistic. And that's not what I want at all. I want to try to create a pocket. If you've internalized the objectification and started to self-objectify, you will link it to your identity. And therefore, it's also very, very hard to get out of it. It's very hard to know what you want and what the society has put on you. And it's a very vulnerable place. And therefore, I say that I want to try to create this pocket, this little space. I want to acknowledge this, acknowledge how Elvira, the stepsister in my movie, is both a victim, but she's also complicit. She is, it's put upon her, but she's also driving it herself. She needs to choose to come out of it herself, but she also needs help. It's safe for women, hopefully, to compare themselves or to sympathize with Elvira, because it's not a moralistic film. I just want to try to tell them, this is how it can feel, and this is maybe how you can get out of it. And there's hope, and there's, of course, there's values in my movie. I don't think a prince is a very big goal for any girl, that to be the prettiest for some stupid man to choose you. But other than that, what you choose to do to your body will always be very, very personal. Dare to talk with curiosity and sympathy with each other about where these standards come from, how deeply ingrained they're actually in the cultural expectations to females, and how we have internalized them, and without ending up looking like men or acting like men. That's also on their terms, right? But how can we find that place where it's not self-harm, but it's self-expression.
You also have those very physical effects. How did you create them, especially the tapeworm scene where it goes like on? And was there a point where you thought, like, how did you decide to have more gore in it or less gore? Because it can also be a deal breaker for some people.
Yeah.
Then, of course, there's the age limit. It limits.
Yeah, yeah.
And then maybe you have heard the Sundance anecdote that somebody...
Sure. I think it was a bad lunch.
It was to somebody who sat in the splatter zone of the puke, and it was actually a person who had a history of stomach trouble. So it was not.
But you know, the PR was great.
You could have asked for more.
No.
Thanked them.
Yeah, and the audience has really taken this to heart. You know, like I didn't puke, but I understand why someone did, and you know, it's become this urban legend, and I love it. I knew, you know, body horror is only effective if the body horror is good. Body horror is often transgressant, you know, you have to push to a place where it's actually uncomfortable. That's where it's interesting to show people something you're not usually seeing. As a body horror fan myself, just with any other scene, like if it's a funny scene or an emotional scene, I have to find it funny or emotional first, right? For you to find it funny or emotional. If I thought, wow, that's gross in a great way, I would do it. But it's important for me that all the body horror in the movie has an inherent part in the film. It's there for a reason. Because I wanted it to be also a movie for a more normal audience who don't maybe know anything about body horror, it was important for me to ease into it and to make sure it was really linked and earned by the movie, by the characters. And even for the audience to want it a little bit. And then for it to be as horrible as I think it is. And I think it's true. And I think it's true also to the Brothers Grimm's version. You know, I don't hack out their eyes at the end.
Yeah,
because
it's one thing with the doves.
Because I could not understand why any person would do that. I felt that was really like shopping an end, that they wanted to punish these stepsisters. And I didn't find it true. For any human being. I thought it was a caricature that was not that interesting. Enduring that pain with her can be cathartic. And especially with the tapeworm coming out, for me, this is, you know, we have these worms in us that we at some point have swallowed the other's gaze on us, and it's eating us up from the inside. And for Elvira, it's like both literally and metaphorically. And when she gets out, and and you can see how long and horrible it is. It's that horrible, funny, gross feeling that's also an act of catharsis. Because it's so long, because it's so big, you can also feel.
It's like a metaphor for the abuse she swallowed.
And she has accepted it. She takes the egg herself, right? It's the that's where she accepts the objectification and starts self-objectifying from that point on. And it's such a powerful moment. And I'm so happy that I can say that with confidence after two spontaneous applauds, both in Sundance and Berlinale at the premiere. You know, there's been applaud by the audience when it's finally out.
Yes.
And then there's silence, and we look at Elvira's face and her relief, and we're relieved, and there's hope at the end of the movie, which is also really important for me.
Yes, and that brings us to one character that for me also was very interesting, which is the other sister. So because actually, just like in the Grimm's fairy tales, there are two stepsisters, and while the focus is on Elvira, there's also Alma. And Alma is not so much the ugly stepsister, she's more the one that's not seen at all. It's almost like she wouldn't exist. She's neither ugly nor beautiful, she's just there. And was Alma meant to be a queer character? Because I always wondered, she seems to be either asexual or definitely not interested in princes or guys.
Mm.
She knows that all those romantic poems, the sister reads, are just fake.
No, Alma for me has always been quite special. She's the only sensible character. And for me, it's a very grim and dark universe. All the characters are somehow, you know, perverted or.
And that's actually very interesting, because usually the queer person is the one to be perverted or at least sexually exoticized, but the queer person is the one who's most basic and unsexualized.
I love that you think of her as queer. I think a lot, because she's a little bit of a blank canvas, I think a lot of people can project on her, and she is the audience's kind of alibi in the story. We her gaze on the others is the audience's gaze, and somehow also the character that connects me with the audience. The audience understands that there's a storyteller here that sings like us. It's not totally cynical, the whole thing. There's humanity, there's sensibility here somewhere. And for me, I think it's very interesting that you call her queer, because as a heterosexual woman, a lot of people think that I give off a queer energy. And I think it is because...
The tie.
Yeah, the tie, the voice, and all of it. I'm very proud that you think so. But I think it is because I myself, when I finally got the courage to come out of the self-objectification, I was trying to find a space for myself. How could I express myself? Where could I exist? And I think it was the same journey as many queer people experience, you know, when you realize that you're queer. And you can't just do the normal recipe everyone else does, you know. You have to position against it, or you have to think about it, you know, and position yourself. And I think with Alma, queer or straight or whatever, she has realized that she is something else, and she cannot live. She'd rather die. She knows her truth, and she cannot. And that's what makes her queer, you know, is that she has to reinvent herself in an anarchistic way, besides the rules of society. And that makes her brave. That makes her love her. And that makes her also the only one to be able to see clearly, you know, and wisely. And I'm very, very proud of that character. Yes.
And then we also have, of course, the Cinderella. And what was interesting is that you mentioned that Elvira is both a victim, but also complicit. And the same could be said for Cinderella, because she is a victim also to some degree, yes, especially to slut shaming.
Yes.
In contrast to Elvira, she seems much more knowledgeable about the world, and she actually makes the system work for her.
Yes.
So how did you decide to make her not just a villain, to not just turn the table?
I didn't want to, you know, make the Cinderella the villain and the ugly stepsister into the, you know, nice heroine. I wanted to keep the archetypes, but make them more human, but not total human. So find the human in the archetype, let's say. And with Cinderella, she was the hardest.
I think many girls cannot relate to Cinderella.
Exactly. But she does exist, and there are princesses. There are women that marry princes. There are a few
there
people.
There is this Grace Kelly type.
Exactly. A great example. And then I was trying, oh, is she this dumb blonde? You know, who is she? But then I thought, no, I have to show her love and justice as well. The key for me was when I understood everything is hard for Elvira. And I can relate to that. You know, nothing came easy to me when it came to boys or sexuality or anything. I was clumsy. I was unknowing. But then there were, again, these friends I had all just came natural to them. And I thought that is Cinderella's power, and that is her beauty. She has been loved, and she loves herself, and she is secure. She has no shame. It's all natural to her. And even some people claim it's anal sex. I will not comment. It's not explicit in the movie, which I would say, yes, if Cinderella had anal sex, she would have no problem with it, because it's just sexuality. It's nothing wrong with it. And I think that's really her superpower, and why she's also a very interesting character for me in this movie.
And now that you have this really successful film, and I cannot see it different than very successful, because it was the movie most talked about film at Sundance, and the one that everybody thought was amazing and stood out. Do you already have something you're working on next? And is it kind of scary to have something that's so highly appreciated? Because then everybody will take this as a standard.
You know, it's a dream come true. I have not been able to take it all in yet. Just very grateful. You know, I felt lonely with this narrative, to be a stepsister, you know. But this character has also showed me there's many more people like me out there. We're a lot of stepsisters, and we have to fight back and love ourselves for that. But I want to say that the things I'm doing next are their own things. They're different. You won't see me do the same thing again. I'm playing with different genres. I think always I will do political messages in cinematic stories that should be watched in cinemas together.
That's also where you should see The Ugly Stepsister. It's now at Berlinale. It's in summer, I think, like it's going to have its German release, and now it's somewhere. Thank you so much, Emilia Blichfeld, for The Ugly Stepsister.
Thank you.